itching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Nothing doing there. Came toward the side of the net. Centered out in front by Cogliano. It bounced around and they score. Oh my, Anaheim takes a 2-1 lead on a bit of a fluky goal here for the Ducks late in this second period.
A fluky goal that was credited to Andrew Cogliano, his 15th of the season, turns out to be the game winner. The Ducks defeat the Winnipeg Jets last night in Anaheim by a 3-1 margin. The Jets road trip through California, a disappointing one on the scoreboard. They lose Thursday night to the LA Kings by a 5-2 margin. They come home with their tails between their legs to face the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow night at MTS Center. On my left is Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Our faithful colleague, Dave Manouk, enjoying some quality rest and relaxation while hitting up the EDM clubs of Las Vegas, no doubt.
Yeah, unfortunately, Dave's not here today, but I should have probably just slept here, Drew.
Yeah, you were up. You pulled the late shift. You and I, I did it Thursday, you did it Friday, but getting out of here at 1 a.m. and having to be back for the 9 a.m. Show isn't the most fun, I suspect. You now know a little bit of what it feels like to be Mr. Rick Ralph.
Yeah, absolutely, and we had a great time. We were actually eating some Illegal Curve sandwiches from Bernstein's Deli.
That's what the surprise was.
Yeah, I brought some sandwiches for the boys, Sean and producer Chris Curry. Got to try the Illegal Curve sandwich. Chris had actually already had one, but Rick had one for the first time. And I asked him, okay, after his first couple bites, Rick, how is it? And he said, it's pretty good.
Oh, that's about as effusive as you can get from Rick. Yeah.
So I took that.
Yeah,
he actually couldn't finish the entire sandwich.
It's a big sandwich.
Rick had to take the other half of the sandwich home.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And you let him do that? You didn't actually grab it away from him and eat one and a half Illegal Curve sandwiches yourself?
No. I was good with the one, and we did a little Tim Hortons run during the broadcast as well. You know, those late broadcasts, nice. You got to fuel up on coffee and Timbits and everything like that.
As I found out on Thursday, Rick, not a coffee drinker, doesn't drink coffee.
No,
so,
no.
Yes.
I think he's more of a tea guy.
No, didn't even say tea, I believe. I think soft drinks is his vice.
Okay, yeah.
And beer.
Yeah.
Beer.
Likes
beer
his too. Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper, something like that. Anyways, that was last night, a late night, no doubt, for you, Ezzy, and an early morning here. But we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is our Facebook page. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is, of course, IllegalCurve.com.
You know, Drew, talking about the Ducks, I know you want to, get into a few things here, but this Ducks team quietly
tied with the San Jose Sharks?
Tied with the Sharks for the Pacific Division lead. And, you look at this Ducks team. They've acquired Patrick Eaves here, and he's been a really nice fit on that top line. Jonathan Bernier filling in for John Gibson. John Gibson's probably about a week away from returning to the lineup.
I believe skating, but not his return, like you said, about a week or 10 days away.
You almost wonder if this Ducks team is going into the playoffs and, the pressure isn't as much on them as other teams. And, I'm not saying that they're going to go all the way, but I kind of get the feeling that you don't want to underestimate this team as far as maybe winning a round or two.
Oh, no. I mean, I think there'd be no reason to underestimate them. They've got 40 wins on the season. Like you said, tied with the San Jose Sharks now for first in the Pacific Division. Sharks still have the tiebreaker by virtue of the more regulation and overtime wins. But this Anaheim Ducks team, there's no reason why I don't think the Oilers, even though they're only 2 points back of both the Sharks and the Ducks, I don't think the Oilers are ready to win the Pacific Division this year, at the end of the playoffs. But there's no reason why Anaheim certainly can't do it. They're a good team. They're talented top to bottom. They're getting balanced scoring. They add a guy like Patrick Eaves. They've got good defense. And then the goaltending question, I mean, you need John Gibson healthy. I don't know if I would trust Jonathan Bernier into the playoffs. But this Anaheim Ducks team is certainly a very good hockey team. We'll see him back again at MTS Center, I believe, coming up next week as well.
Yeah, on Thursday night, The Ducks are in town. This Ducks team, watching them last night, and we've seen them this year at MTS Center once already. I mentioned this on the broadcast with Rick last night. This is a team that's very mobile. That back end, I think, is a top five back end. And, you know, you had Cam Fowler paired up with Josh Manson last night, and then you had Hampus Lindholm paired up with Sammy Vatanen. I mean, these guys get the puck out of their own zone quickly. They transitioned very quickly. There were significant chunks of the first period and the third period where the Jets were completely hemmed in their own zone. Yeah. They just couldn't get anything going. There was a stretch of over 10 minutes starting in the third period there. The first half of the third period, the Jets didn't have a single shot on net.
The Jets didn't show anything on this road trip. I mean, this was... Now, to some extent...
I would say they had maybe, Drew, two good periods out of the six.
I thought the first period...
Maybe one.
I thought the first period against L.A. was a good period.
Right.
The rest of that game certainly wasn't for the Jets. You know, last night, yeah, you could probably make the argument they maybe won one of the three periods.
Yeah, the middle period was the Jets' best period. But yeah. Again, I mean, they were still losing after two periods.
Yeah, they were outclassed by... It's one thing to be outclassed by Anaheim, because the Ducks are clearly a better team. It's another thing to have had that performance that they had on Thursday night against the Kings, where a Kings team that can't score, you know, they can't score 5-on-5, and frankly, they still didn't score 5-on-5. But when you give up three power play goals, and we'll talk about shorthanded problems that Jets have had and the penalty-killing problems that Jets have had throughout the course of the broadcast this morning. But... I mean, I know you're playing out the season and these games really don't matter, but boy, it's just a microcosm for the entire year watching that Jets game on Thursday against the LA Kings, giving up three power play goals and a shorthanded goal and losing 5-2. And people think that it's okay that there shouldn't be significant changes this offseason.
Well, I think it's a given that there's going to be changes in the offseason. You can't go into next year without addressing the defense and the goaltending, in my opinion, and the special teams. So if that means you have to go out and you have to acquire a penalty-killing specialist, I mean, the thing that, and again, we're going to get into that later, Drew, but yeah, when I look at, you know, some of the players that the Jets have at their disposal on the PK, I mean, you've got talented players. Blake Wheeler's an excellent penalty killer. Brian Little's an excellent penalty killer. When Sean Mathias is healthy, he's a good penalty killer. Joel Armia, I think, has shown a lot of strides in his second year in the NHL, but certainly, it's the same old story, and Hustler and Lawless talked about it, I think, for 3 hours on yesterday's show, and, you know, they talked to Ken Wiebe about it, they talked to Craig Button about it, and it kind of carried over into our conversation for the pregame show. You could really go back 2 years, and we're still having the same conversation about the fact that the Jets are the most penalized team in the league, and the penalty kill's not very good, yeah, and the power play could be better, right? So it's not just one thing, it's many things, and you want development in all of these areas.
Like
you don't need the top five power play, Drew, to win the Stanley Cup. You don't need to have the top five penalty kill and the top five power play, but you want to see improvements in these areas. You can't be taking this many penalties. We went over it yesterday, Rick and I, and Dustin Byfuglien has the most minor penalties, tied with Dion Phaneuf, 38, and then second on the Jets is Toby Enstrom. So two of your top defensemen take the most minor penalties, right?
Yeah.
And then there are other guys on the team that take a lot of penalties as well. Blake Wheeler actually takes quite a few penalties, but Blake Wheeler's a top player on this team. But just to...
There's some people and some penalties that you're willing to accept, and I think some of the penalties Dustin Byfuglien takes, you're willing to accept just because that's the nature of his game. You can't expect him to stop being a physical presence and everything else, and that intimidation factor is just part of his game. But a guy like Toby Enstrom, his offensive shortcomings have been well documented. His play on the back end has been nothing to write home about, to put it mildly. And then to compound it all by taking multiple penalties and frequently and putting your team that can't kill penalties in a situation where they have to, it's just a recipe for disaster year in, year out, year in, year out. It's the same conversations. I think we can pull up an old show plan from 2 years ago at this time of the year, and we're having the same conversations year in, year out.
I think Josh Morrissey this year, Drew, has passed Toby Enstrom as the best left-side defenseman on this team.
There's no question about it, just because, and that's a testament to how steady Josh Morrissey has been. And, I mean, you're quite vocal about it, how poor Toby Enstrom has been this year.
Well, and, you know, it's not just this year. I mean, when you look back 2 years ago when the Jets played the Ducks in the first round, Toby Enstrom has difficulty in that shutdown role. Mm-hmm. I think he's more suited actually at this point in his career to be a third pairing defenseman. And I think when people look at his contract, they say, well, you can't have Toby Enstrom on your third pair. Well, the reality is, I think I trust Ben Sherratt out there more than I trust Toby Enstrom in a defending role. Honestly.
Well, you have to, I mean, the contract is not Toby Enstrom's fault. And I don't blame Toby Enstrom for the having that sizable contract. That was a bad assessment done by the general manager. Okay, I get it, and you know it's a mistake. And so just because he's getting the big dollars doesn't mean he has to play in a role in which he's unsuited for. And to your point, if he's better suited, and then this is going to be a conversation probably more for next year at this point in time than this year. But if he's better suited next season to play a third pairing role, if they're able to upgrade that left side of the defense that you and I are, and we're going to talk about today, both think they absolutely must upgrade. Everybody thinks they must upgrade the left side of the defense. If Toby Enstrom's playing third pairing minutes and making, you know, $5 million a year, so be it. Maybe that's where you have to do what's best for the team, regardless of the actual salaries attached to each player.
Drew, for a guy that's making that much money to have one goal in 60 games.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of, you know, I've spoken to Trevor Kidd about this quite a bit. You know, a lot of people will point out the fact that Toby Enstrom can move the puck really well and he can get himself, you know, in the rush going and get himself out of trouble and all of that. I agree. I mean, Toby Enstrom is a very smooth skater. You know, he can make that first pass. But after that, what else does he really do well? Because he's obviously not producing offensively. I mean, the first year he came over, I think he was coming off of a 53-point season, something like that, and his offensive numbers have declined. And he's known as more of an offensive defenseman.
Sure.
So I think when you're looking at, you know, what else he offers, he doesn't offer that shutdown role. That's kind of Josh Morrissey's job now. You look at who was out there against the Getzlaff line, mm-hmm. the Anaheim top line, it was Morrissey and Brian Strait last night. And then you had Mark Stewart on the third pair with Nelson Noje. But again, yeah, you look at the salary, Drew, and you say, okay, well, you know, he's got to be a top four defenseman. Well, remember 7-8 years ago, Wade Redden was making $6 million a year, and he ended up playing for the Hartford Wolfpack.
Just because you have the salary, that doesn't mean you're guaranteed the role. And that's, I think, that's something the Jets are going to have to, it's going to come to a head next season. Obviously, at this point this year, it's not an issue because the season's done for. But next season, when the Jets have to address that left side defenseman role, there's no reason to think that Toby Enstrom wouldn't be your third pairing left side, because Josh Morrissey has outplayed him. Hopefully you're acquiring a top four left side defenseman this offseason, probably via a trade, as we'll talk about, because the roster of UFA left side defensemen is, I suggest, between slim and none, assuming the Jets aren't going to be in on Carl Alsner.
Drew, I think it would be very interesting to know, and I don't know if we're ever going to know this, but if the Jets and Toby Enstrom would talk about Toby waiving his no-move clause. And I know they've talked a lot
to
about it.
To expose him in the right. expansion draft, you're right. saying? Yeah, I mean, if he would be happy to go to Las Vegas, but the question is, does Las Vegas have any appetite for that contract? I mean, it's only 1 year left, understandably, and sure, they're probably, you know, whoever else they're going to be stuck with on the back end is probably, you know, not as good, and they have to reach a certain salary threshold, and there's so many rules and regulations attached to the expansion draft. But I don't know. I think if he would be willing to do that, it would make life a lot easier for the Jets, because then they can go with the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goaltender.
Right, and then you don't have to expose guys like Joel Armia or Marco Dano or decide between Adam Lowry or Matthew Perreault, right?
Yeah.
So, again, you know, I don't want to make this, you know, the Toby Enstrom roast, but I think anybody that's watched the Jets this year can see that, you know, he's fallen from where he was back in 2011-12 when he came over. You know, we'll see what his future is with the Jets. He's only got 1 year left on his contract. We know that he's all but done for this year. So it's something that needs to be addressed. The left side has always been the weak side for the Jets. We've talked about it probably for 4 years now.
Yeah. It hasn't changed, and maybe this offseason, and actually later on in the show, we'll look at potential trade targets for the Jets that would fill that left side defense role. For now, though, let's head to break. When we come back, David Alter is going to join us. He joins us from Buffalo, where the Leafs are in action there tonight. We'll talk to David a bit about the Calder race, about the Eastern Conference playoff race. Just getting started this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Yes. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Buffalo, where David Alter is covering tonight's Leafs-Sabres game. You can read David's work at The Athletic. He covers the Leafs for that fine website. David, I know you're up against the clock, so whenever you need to go, you just give us a you let us know, and we'll let you bail. But good morning for the time being.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing very well, David. How about yourself?
Not bad. Got a nice little rest the night before, nice and settled in for what should be an interesting Atlantic Division matchup here.
Absolutely. The Leafs in that third spot in the Atlantic Division right now. They have that three-point lead over the Boston Bruins for that final playoff spot in the Atlantic. Is there a bit of a sense of comfort maybe around this Leafs team, the way they've been playing lately? 7-2-1, winners of three in a row?
Yeah, there's definitely confidence, for sure. Comfort, I don't know. It seems one of those things where anytime you try and let that seep in, any veteran player on the team, any young player on the team, Mike Babcock, anybody, said, well, they haven't done anything yet. So there's definitely a lot of confidence, though. There are players who feel like they can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. It's just 9 regular season games left, but a lot of scoreboard watching, and it looks like just when they get a little bit of a buffer, teams are still nipping at the heels, so they know that they still have a lot of work to do.
David, we have to ask you about William Nylander. He had a couple of points in that win over the Devils. He's on a 10-game point streak. He's got 21 goals and 56 points now. You know, when you talk about all these amazing rookies that the Leafs have with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, and William Nylander was drafted right before Nikolaj Ehlers back in 2014. Kind of reminds you a bit of Ehlers sometimes. Is William Nylander getting talked about enough, and as far as how good of a rookie year he's having?
Well, I think now he's definitely got the attention. I think in the opening month of the season, he was actually rookie of the month. And so there was talk about him then. And then Nylander kind of bounced around the lineup. There was even one game where he was put on the fourth line because there were some defensive issues with his game that Mike Babcock didn't like. But over the course of the last month or so, since he's been put back with Austin Matthews on the wing, it's changed a lot. And now it's starting to kind of go for the best. So it's definitely interesting to see now how people are talking to him. But guys, I apologize. The room is about to open. This wasn't as short as I expected it would be, but the Sabres with an optional, they're opening it up pretty quickly.
Go ahead, David. We appreciate you joining us, even if it was just a quick one, and we'll do it again coming up real soon.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
You never know what's going to happen in live radio. I think that's what the lesson is today, is that you just never know when the room is going to open up, as it just did on David Alter. We do appreciate David joining us for a brief moment there. It's a fascinating race in the Eastern Conference, and we're going to touch on it. Oh, we can touch on it now might as well then. With how close it's getting down to the wire, the Bruins, again, that's a terrible loss they suffered on Thursday night at home to the Lightning. They're looking like there might be in a bit of a free fall. And, you know, all of a sudden, it looks like maybe the Lightning are going to be able to squeak in the Islanders. It's a real interesting battle that's taking place in the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah, and, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning needed to win that game in overtime last night against the Detroit Red Wings. And then you've got Boston in Brooklyn tonight. So a big game between the Islanders and the Bruins, as you mentioned, Drew. Both of those teams are tied 3 points behind the Leafs. It kind of almost looks like the Leafs are more of a sure bet to make the playoffs than the Bruins were a couple of weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to give the Leafs a lot of credit here. They've won 3 in a row. They've only lost 2 of their last 10. So pretty impressive what they're doing. And, you know, I'm not saying that this team is going to make the playoffs, but look at what the Carolina Hurricanes are doing. The Carolina Hurricanes have lost 1 of their last 10 games, 6-1-3 in their last 10. And again, I think they're a long shot to make the playoffs, but they're only 5 points back of the Islanders. Pretty incredible what the Hurricanes are doing, but I would say that right now it's between the Islanders, Bruins, and Lightning for that last wild card spot. And then, you know, if Toronto keeps up the pace that they're at right now, it looks like they're going to get that first wild card spot, Drew. But then again, you know, you look at what's going on, and the Islanders, to me, have been the most surprising team. And we really thought that they were out of it when Jack Capuano was fired.
Yeah.
But you know,
huge
win
for them last night against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's the best team in the league, as far as I'm concerned, and they beat them last night.
Yeah.
So,
well, let me ask you this.
And it was a shootout, so I mean, it could have gone either way. But needless to say, you get the 2 points. Who cares how you get it?
And I believe they got the 2 points on Wednesday night against the New York Rangers as well, and then in the big divisional, big rivalry game between the Rangers and the Islanders. But you know, let me ask you this, Ezzie. You have two interim coaches there in Doug Waite with the Islanders, and you have Bruce Cassidy with the Bruins. If one or both of those teams don't make the playoffs, does that mean that they're in the market for a head coach? Does Waite or Cassidy have to make the playoffs to have the interim tag lifted, or one more than the other in that instance?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Drew, but you know, I would imagine, just based on where the teams are and the history of the coaches, because Bruce Cassidy was a head coach with the Washington Capitals, and then he moved over and he went back to the AHL, actually.
That was about, 10 years ago?
Yeah, that was quite a long time ago. And then he worked with the Boston Bruins, so he's familiar with the organization. But I would probably say that Doug Waite has a better chance at remaining the head coach, and that's not really based on anything but kind of the situation and speculation. But certainly if one of these teams makes the playoffs, you got to think that they would consider making that coach a permanent head coach. So whether that's Bruce Cassidy or Doug Waite, now we don't know what the long-term plan is with either of these organizations, because they might have a coach in mind, whether that's a guy like Ken Hitchcock or someone else, right?
Sure. I would think that Doug Waite is more secure, even if the Islanders don't make the
playoffs.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. And Doug Waite's been an assistant there for a long time.
That's right.
And he's worked with Garth Snow, has a really good relationship. He's played with the Islanders.
Yeah.
So you would think maybe Doug Waite has a better chance at staying on as a head coach. But, you know, Bruce Cassidy's done a nice job there, not as of late. But
that's the problem, that, you know, if they end up collapsing, they're losers of four in a row. If the Bruins end up collapsing out of the playoffs as they currently sit for a third consecutive year, you'd have to think that they're going to try and get a whole, you know, just complete fresh blood in there behind the bench and with the coaching staff. And so I think for Bruce Cassidy, I think he needs to probably get into the playoffs and maybe win a round with the Bruins. And I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, as that Bruins team, you know, struggles, claws, fights tooth and nail to try and make the playoffs there. It's some interesting games, you know, on the schedule when it comes to the Eastern Conference playoff race. You know, the Bruins are at the Islanders. That's today. That's a huge game. I believe that's this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken, that the Bruins are at the Islanders. You have the Bruins and the Lightning on April 4th, and then the Lightning at the Leafs on April 6th. Those are the only three games, really, where the teams that are battling for the final playoff spot there play against each other. Other than that, it's just teams against other teams. They all sort of play against four playoff teams in their last nine or so games, so there's no real advantage one way or the other. If you put a premium on home games, the Bruins have six home games left in their final eight, and only two on the road, which is the most of all the teams, not including the Hurricanes, who also have six home games. But I don't know. The Hurricanes are a nice story right now, but I think they would have to win probably their last 10 games straight just to make it. I think they're too far behind other than that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we talked about it on Wednesday's NHL This Week show. The Leafs, you know, get the Sabres tonight. Sometimes those games are the most dangerous. Drew, you think about, you know, a week and a half ago when the Devils played the Flyers and they had lost 10 games in a row, and the Flyers were still somewhat in it at that point, and the Devils beat the Flyers 6-2. So tonight, you got a Sabres team that is not going to the playoffs, and they're playing the role of spoiler right now. They're playing kind of their border rivals in the Leafs, and you know that the guys in the dressing room, that's what they're playing for, because they're not playing for a playoff spot. They want to beat the Leafs and hopefully hurt their playoff chances, right? Just the reality.
Yeah.
So when you look at that Leaf schedule, they've got the Panthers coming up, they've got the Wings coming up, they have the Sabres again, but we talked about their last four games. They've got Washington, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. So they end the season with a very difficult schedule, but those are all home games. So
yeah,
it's going to be very interesting. The Eastern Conference race at the bottom is unbelievable, because you have teams there that you didn't think would necessarily be there either at the beginning of the season or kind of at the midway point of the season. And you've also got basically the opportunity for any team to win the Metropolitan Division and the President's Trophy. I mean, you've got Pittsburgh in there, Washington, Columbus, all three of those teams could finish anywhere, right? And one of those teams is most likely going to finish not with home ice advantage at all, right? And the three seed, mm-hmm. and then most likely you're probably going to have the Rangers in a wild card spot.
Yeah, and then you look at, if you flip it over and you look at it from the Western Conference perspective, I think we all agree that the eight teams that are going to make up the Western Conference playoffs are clearly outlined. I don't expect the Los Angeles Kings are going to be able to make a big enough push to catch up to the Nashville Predators 8 points back with nine games remaining.
You know, Drew, just quickly on that topic, of the eight teams that are going to make the playoffs, really the only team that's locked in is the Rangers.
In the East.
Yeah, the Rangers are pretty much locked in because they're
the first wild
7 points behind Columbus right now. Yeah. So they're most likely not going to catch Columbus. But Columbus is only 3 points behind Washington for the division lead.
Well, let me ask you this. So if you're the Capitals, you're the Penguins, and you're the Blue Jackets, and you know there's 3 points separating you, the three teams, for the top spot in the Metropolitan and for the President's Trophy, are you playing hard for the last, you know, 8-9 games of the year, knowing that you have a long playoff run expected?
At this point in the season, Drew, absolutely. I think you have to.
You're still going 110%?
You can't start scratching your good players at this point. Maybe with one or two games left, you can start doing that. But when you're talking about Columbus, they've got 9 games left. And Pittsburgh's got one more game played. And then Washington's also got 9 games left. So, I mean, you want to win the division, do you not? I don't see any reason why you don't, because if you win the division, you most likely play the Islanders or Toronto. No, you will play the Islanders or Toronto or Tampa Bay, whoever it is. I hope Tampa Bay stays in it, just because it's been such an interesting race. But I think you just want to have the better first round matchup.
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't win the division, Drew, then so let's say you're Pittsburgh and you don't end up winning the division, you're gonna play Columbus.
Yeah,
wouldn't you want to play Toronto in the first round as opposed to Columbus?
You undoubtedly would. I think that's the problem with it, is that I think they'd love to. That's what makes this NHL, the playoff system, so stupid. But I think
that the Rangers are the first wild card team is actually so stupid.
That's beyond. But the Rangers can sit there. They can rest guys over the last 7-8 games. The Rangers can take their players that are a little nicked up and give them an extra game off here or there, because they know that they have nothing to play for the last 2 weeks of the season. Whereas the Penguins, who, you know, everybody else is banged up to some extent, and it's, you know, does the coach risk losing out on the President's Trophy or losing out on the division lead to rest these guys gearing up for a long playoff run?
Well, again, though, Drew, I think when you're talking about resting guys, that happens the last couple games of the year, right? You don't start doing that now, because I don't think you want to start to take the foot off of the gas and start to, you know, ease up, even though you know that you're going to the playoffs. I mean, this time right now is still important, and the Pittsburgh Penguins have injuries right now, right? So, I mean, you can't – I don't think you're even in a position where you can do that. Rest guys, because you don't have the guys to rest.
Sure, that's right? a fair point. Penguins have no one else to call up at this point.
Matta, Letang, Daly, Hainsey, all of those guys are injured right now. Just using Pittsburgh as an example. But I think, you know, once you get to a point where you know, okay, we're second or third in the Metro Division, that's maybe when you rest guys with one or two games left.
It'll be interesting. We come back with more Winnipeg Jets talk as we're going to look at – what are we going to look at when we come back here? I have it right here in front of me. We're going to look at what are the biggest offseason priority for the Jets. Is it a improved goaltending? Is it left side defense? Is it a shutdown, Selke type forward? Or is it a coaching or management change? The biggest offseason priority for the Jets, that's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Steve and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And that is dumped in. He's gone!
Such a tough save. Backhand, forehand, just beats Hutchinson to the post.
Miller scores! Oh, great shot by J.T. Miller.
Over the shoulder of Hellebuck, Miller just explodes and gets to the dot. Wastes no time. Wow.
Too many goals against. The story of the Winnipeg Jets, that montage of goals against Pavlik. Of course, the famous one from the red line by Barrett Jackman. Goals against Hellebuck and goals against Hutchinson. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Obviously, Ezzy, the 16-17 Winnipeg Jets season, a disappointment, a crushing disappointment. Winding down with another 2 weeks to go here. And the question I have for you, in clearly what needs to be a off-season of change, an off-season of upheaval with this Winnipeg Jets franchise. You would think it needs to be, but then again, they've had off-seasons where you would think that before, they've done nothing. What is your priority? Is it improved goaltending for the Winnipeg Jets? Getting another netminder to challenge Connor Hellebuck or to maybe be the number one goaltender? Is it a left-side defenseman to fill the void that clearly exists behind Josh Morrissey? Is it a shutdown forward? A bona fide third line shutdown defensive forward who can also contribute offensively, and the coach can rely on him for 12, 14, 16, 18 minutes a game? Or is it a coaching and management change? Is it time to press the reset button when it comes to the coach and or the general manager? Of those four or five options, I'll actually even throw in, maybe add, instead of a complete reset in the front office, maybe you add another layer. Maybe you add a president of hockey operations, like a lot of teams do. The Jets don't. Of those priorities, which one would you rank at the top of your list?
Yeah, for me, Drew, it's the previous two. And when you've given up the second most goals in the NHL, to the only team that's allowed more goals than the Jets this year is the Colorado Avalanche. So when you've given up, that many goals and you average 3.19 goals against, for me, it's got to be the defense and the goaltending. And for me, the left side D and the number one goaltender are equal. I think the Jets need that veteran goaltender to come in and push Connor Hellebuck and possibly start even more games next year than Connor Hellebuck, a bona fide starter in the NHL. They need that just as much as they need a top four left side D. And my point is, with Toby Enstrom as your first or second best left side defenseman, I just don't think you're going anywhere. And I've said that for a few years now, and I realize that, the analytics community will point out to his numbers and all that. But again, I go back to, what else does Toby Enstrom do aside from make that first pass and, move the puck well out of his own zone? One goal in 60 games for a guy that makes $5.75 million. And again, it's not just about that one goal. He doesn't defend very well. When he goes up against big, skilled forwards like Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler, even though Enstrom was not playing last night, Drew,
but
Enstrom just doesn't defend well enough, I think, for this team. I think they need someone who is more of a pure shutdown defenseman. Not to say that you don't want a guy that can also contribute offensively, but, next segment, we're going to get into some possible trade targets. And you mentioned, Drew, the UFA market is... it's pretty slim. I mean, a guy like Carl Alsner, first off, he might stay with Washington.
He's the big... If you were going to dip into the free agent market for a left-side defenseman...
Yeah, you'd get Carl Alsner.
He's the best one available this coming offseason.
Yeah, and there are some other guys. Chris Russell's another guy. Michael Stone's another guy. But Carl Alsner's in a different, I think, league right there. He's a top-pairing defenseman on the Washington Capitals. At the very least, he's their second-best left-shot defenseman, right? So I think you need to go out and address this. And whether that's via free agency or via trade, you got to bring in, again, a bona fide goaltender that can give you the type of goaltending that you need. And, Michael Hutchinson's played well here the last three games, but I think we'd agree that if you go into next year with Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson...
you need to be drug tested.
Well, and I expect Connor Hellebuck to be better, Drew, just because that's going to be one more year in the NHL. But again, can he give you 60-plus games?
You can't possibly think that the goaltending situation can be status quo going for next
right.
year.
Right, and Andre Pavlik's not coming back. Yeah. So right now your options are, because you only have these two guys under contract, Michael Hutchinson and Connor Hellebuck. Yeah. And Hutchinson could, in theory, be selected by Vegas. I would argue that he won't be selected because there's going to be other goalies.
Yeah. Michael Hutchinson should be the Manitoba Moose backup goaltender next year.
Right.
With Eric Comrie. Comrie should get the majority of the starts.
Right, and I don't know where that leaves Jamie Phillips.
Well, Jamie Phillips probably needs another year in Tulsa. I mean, he probably, you know, he needs to play, so there's no reason to have Jamie Phillips as your backup goaltender.
It's possible, and, you know, if Michael Hutchinson is playing in the American Hockey League, you know, he might still get some opportunities in the NHL if there are some injuries. But needless to say, Drew, right. Back to what we were talking about before, I think if you don't improve the left side, because we know the Jets are pretty set on the right side, mm-hmm. and Josh Morrissey has now developed, not maybe completely, but he's developed into an everyday NHLer on the left side. I think he's your top pairing defenseman right now.
He's your top pairing left side defenseman right now, clearly.
And I don't. I realize last night he was the top pairing defenseman.
Well,
but
he's
he's their best defenseman right now on the left side.
Yeah.
People on Twitter are going after me here because I was saying that I'd rather have Ben Sherratt out there as opposed to Toby Enstrom defending, and I'll stand by that.
Well, that's fine. People on Twitter like to do a lot of things. So
I think Ben Sherratt's a better defensive defenseman than Enstrom. I'm not saying he's better offensively. I'm not saying that he's as good of a skater or he can move the puck as well. But I think
you don't trust Toby Enstrom.
I think Toby Enstrom
is
a below average defender, and I don't think it's been talked about enough.
Fair point. You're talking about it right now. You know, I look at that list that we're talking about of the priorities for the Jets in the offseason, and I definitely think that upgrading goaltending is certainly high on my list. I mean, and it's high on everybody's list. And if it's not high on Jets management list, then I don't know what they've been watching for the last, you know, 2 seasons, 3 seasons, 4 seasons. It would be beyond me if they don't do anything to upgrade the goaltending. But an easy upgrade that doesn't cost it doesn't cost a penny in terms of salary cap space is to put in another layer of management in the front office. And I don't for the life of me know why the Jets wouldn't do that. Why they wouldn't try and get a senior advisor of hockey operations, a president of hockey operations, whatever sort of title you want to give the guy. But I think it's clear that right now, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff needs another sounding board and maybe a voice of sober second thought when it comes to some of the decisions he has made as in the tenure as GM. I don't believe that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going away. Not Mark Chipman's style from everything we've been able to see. That being said, that doesn't mean the status quo has to remain exactly the same. I think there is certainly a justifiable reason and a justifiable opportunity to bring in another layer of management in which to bandy about ideas. That maybe says to Kevin Cheveldayoff 2 years ago, hey, you need some veteran forwards in there. You need to actually keep Lee Stempniak and just insulate your forwards a little bit more. Or, hey, your plans with the goaltending situation of Hellebuck and Hutchinson this year, that's not going to fly. You need to insulate your young goaltenders. I think that's an easy solution, and all it costs the Jets is some money out of the True North pocketbooks. Doesn't cost them anything in terms of salary cap space. Doesn't cost them a roster spot. I think that is an easy solution that I would also like to see implemented this offseason when they do the full post-mortem of what has been a terrible 16-17 season.
And the moves that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff has coming up are very crucial moves to the future of the organization, right, Drew? When you're talking about, you know, bringing in a number one goaltender or bringing in a top four left side defenseman, you've also got the future of Jacob Trouba. You've got the future of Brian Little. Brian Little's got 1 year left on his contract, as does Trouba. So are right. you going to re-sign Brian Little after next year? Are you going to re-sign Jacob Trouba after next year? Does he want to be here? I mean, who are you going to protect in the expansion draft? Are you going to trade your first-round pick to get that left-side defenseman?
And everything you just said is exactly to my point of why not bring in that veteran sounding board for the general manager? Why not bring in another layer of hockey expertise in which that they may have experienced these decisions before and have had to, you know, figure out the best case scenario moving forward? Why not have these conversations? Why not bring that individual in as another resource? These resources, these off-ice resources, doesn't cost the team anything. It costs out of the pocketbook, but it doesn't cost them anything salary cap-wise, and I think the Jets are lacking in that department.
Right, Drew, and you see that in other organizations, whether it's Calgary with Tree Living and Burke or
exactly.
Toronto with Shanahan and Lamoriello. I understand what your point is. I just don't know if that's in the plans for True North. I literally don't. So, I mean, I realize that you're saying that could – changing the structure of management could allow the Jets to be more successful – more detailed, maybe rethink some ideas that the organization makes. But right now, I just don't know if that's in the cards. And I'm not saying that it's not a great idea. And, you know, a lot of fingers are being pointed at management and coaching, and that's because the Jets have now missed the playoffs for two straight years. But, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice have one more year on their contracts. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see them get extended for probably one or two more years.
And I don't understand why they would do that, but I don't necessarily think...
Well, you know, because it's the lame duck situation.
I don't,
right?
I don't buy that as an argument. If you don't want to be a lame duck head coach and a lame duck general manager, have a better performance on the ice.
No, but you know what I mean, right?
I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree with you. I think they probably will be handed contract extensions. I would deem those contract extensions to be undeserving contract extensions. And that's why if you're going to do that, which I wouldn't do, I just want to make that perfectly clear, I wouldn't do that, not that anyone's asking me my opinion from the Jets organization, but I would also want to bring in some veteran, a veteran voice, a veteran, you know, front office executive who has been through the battles, who has been through these difficult situations. I mean, all due respect to Kevin Cheveldayoff, he's never had a lot of these difficult decisions at an NHL level.
Well, hold on a second. I mean, he's had decisions to make as far as re-signing players and trades to make. So I wouldn't say that he hasn't made big decisions at the NHL level, Drew, because he traded Evander Kane.
Yeah, but he traded Evander Kane only after Evander Kane quit on the team.
Oh, sure, but it was still a very serious decision that had to be made. Same thing goes with trading Andrew Ladd to Chicago for a first-round pick. So, look, Chevy has not made a lot of trades. But I wouldn't say that he knows how to run an NHL team. He's been doing it for 6 years. Now,
yeah,
you could say that they haven't had playoff success, but really in the first two or three years, who expected the Jets to have a lot of playoff success?
But you mentioned Brian Little, and that's a difficult decision because if you're not going to re-sign him
right.
to a long-term contract
I think they should, by the way.
I think they should, too. Even with Jack Roslovic coming up.
Who replaces Brian Little if they don't re-sign him?
I mean, maybe the organization thinks Jack Roslovic, but then they would be making the
He's
same...
He's a rookie.
They would be making the same mistake they have made the last number of years where they don't insulate their rookies at all. They just say, okay, you're ready because there's no other competition. So when you...
You have no one to replace Brian Little.
And I think you have to re-sign him. I agree with you. But in the course of that negotiation... You know, or maybe they think they don't have to re-sign him, and then they have to trade him this offseason because, of course, he'd be a pending UFA after next year, and the closer you get to the trade deadline next year when he's not under contract, the less you're going to get in a return for him.
But then, you know, Drew, you run into the problem with Mark Scheifele on an 8-year deal. Blake Wheeler's got 2 years left, right? And then you've got Nikolai Ehlers' next contract, and then you're going to have Patrick Laine's next contract. You're not going to be able to keep all these guys.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I refuse to believe that as an argument. I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks have managed to keep their core together for the most part,
yeah, but
year
on.
In, year out.
But you're talking about now possibly having six forwards
yeah.
that make over $5 million.
It's a good problem to have because that means they've earned it and they deserve it. And if you can't, and if you don't think it's going to work financially, then you have to pull a trigger on a trade. And I would rather be proactive than reactive on that front. And again, I would like another voice in the room besides the voice of Kevin Cheveldayoff and besides the voice of his assistant general managers. And that Mark Chipman would certainly be involved in a decision of that magnitude as the owner of the team.
And maybe it's something they look at, Drew. I have no idea. I mean, your idea, though, of bringing someone in the president of hockey operations role, let's call it that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think has validity.
I'm glad.
Just not sure if they're going to do it. I'm being completely honest. I just don't know.
I don't know either, but it's something that I would certainly prioritize this offseason. Goaltending, left side defense, those are the hard ones to fill. This president of hockey operations, there's lots of smart hockey men out there who are looking for jobs and who would be, I think, great additions to this Jets front office. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the left defense targets that the Winnipeg Jets might look to acquire via a trade in this offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Long stretch, Justin Williams is in. Williams closing. Stopped by Condon. A huge save late in the period. Osner scores! Carl Osner with a buzz bomb.
We discussed him briefly last segment. Carl Osner scoring for the Washington Capitals. He's going to be the best of a slim group when you're talking about free agents that play the left side of your defense. Osner, 28 years old, still likely, I think most people would expect him to re-sign with the Washington Capitals. He would certainly be a great fit on any of the other 30 NHL teams if he doesn't, if he chooses to leave Washington. That being said, I don't think it would be realistic to expect him here in Winnipeg next season, but he would certainly fill a big void, as we've been discussing the problems the Jets have on the left side of their defense. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking to watch the big game, Bernstein's Deli has it on. They have their big screen TVs. They have drink specials. They have great food. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. So, Ezzy, I think we're in agreement that given the lack of what I would describe as viable options.
Well, you know, hold on a second. You sent me out the list. We were preparing for the show and kind of going over, you know, topics and everything like that. And, you know, you look at the UFA market for left side defensemen. You mentioned Carl Osner. I think Carl Osner is a fantastic defenseman. He's an all-star level defenseman. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the other options out there, Chris Russell's a good defenseman, having a great season on the Oilers.
You're just really pissing off the analytics community today, aren't you?
Well, I mean, the guy's a good defenseman. I don't care what the analytics say. He blocks shots and he defends. Jets need better defenders.
Yeah.
That's what this team needs. And he's done that. And he's having a good year. And the analytics community, even though, you know, they said he wasn't very good, they've at least admitted that he's done better than they thought he was going to do. So when you look at that list of defensemen, I mean, you've got guys like Johnny Oduya and Brian Campbell on there, and we don't even know if those guys are going to be playing next year.
Yeah, they're at the end of their career, clearly.
Right, and they might stick with Chicago, who knows, or they might want to move on to another team. I think both of those guys would probably want to be on contending teams, right?
Yeah.
So it's just not a very good list. Ron Hainsey's another guy on there. Fedor Tootin, I mean, Brendan Smith. I mean, these guys just, I don't think, are going to make the Jets that much better, with all due respect. So you
were sort of vacating the free agency market for a left side defenseman and instead looking at the trade market for a left side defenseman.
Right. And, you know, I got to say, before I start going over some of these guys, I mean, I've kind of ranked them in their likelihood of coming to Winnipeg, and starting off with the guys that I think are less likely to come to Winnipeg. So the better defenseman. Right, and that's why I started off with Cam Fowler, a guy who's got 1 year left on his contract. But you watched the Anaheim Ducks yesterday. I mean, the way Cam Fowler skates, the way he defends, he can chip in offensively. He's got, I think, 34 points this year. I mean, if that's an option. And I also kind of drew, by the way, I think I have seven defensemen here. I didn't pick defensemen that I picked the defensemen based on the likelihood that they could be traded either because they've got 1 year left on their contract.
Yeah.
Or their age.
Sure.
And so I didn't, you know, for example, I didn't include Mark Stahl on this list because I just don't think that the Rangers are going to trade him with, you know, the remaining years left on his contract. So Cam Fowler's a guy to me that would fit in. He would instantly become, and again, we should, you know, preface this by saying on Wednesday's show, we were talking about whether or not the Jets should trade their first round pick. And we were talking about goaltenders and left side D. And I kind of thought about it, and I agree with you. You were right. That I think.
Hang on, Rory, make sure you have that as clipped as the, you know, for use later on in the program. Thank you.
In all honesty, though, Drew, I think if the Jets do move their first round pick of the draft this year, it would be more so for a defenseman, because I think you'd have to package up a first round pick plus a prospect and maybe even another mid round pick to get one. The example I used, I guess what I'm trying to say here is I think that the Jets should make a Dougie Hamilton-like trade.
Dougie Hamilton was traded from the Boston Bruins,
right,
to the Calgary Flames.
For a first-rounder,
yeah,
and two first-rounders at the draft. We were there.
No, first-rounder and two second-rounders.
Two second-rounders, so three,
yeah,
draft picks. And why I think the Jets need to make a move for a left-side D-man is because I just don't think they're going to address that in free agency. I mean, Carl Alsner is going to have a lot of teams to choose from if he doesn't stay with the Capitals.
Sure.
And, you know, some of the other options, I think Michael Stone's going to have a lot of offers. But again, you know, a guy like Michael Stone, I don't think is a number one left side defenseman. He's probably more of a second pair, third pair guy. So regardless, that's how this kind of came up. I think that the Jets need to make a trade similar to the Dougie Hamilton trade to bring in a defenseman of a similar age that's a top four defenseman. Well, to play with Josh Morrissey, because right now Josh Morrissey is your number one left side defenseman. It's amazing to say that in his rookie year, but he is
going in, and he is, you know, probably you know, depending on what the Jets do in the offseason, right now he would be number one on the depth chart starting you know, at the end of the 2016-17 season.
Okay, so
and you mentioned Cam Fowler. So let me start there.
And I should, and again, what I said before, Drew, is that I think the likelihood of them getting Cam Fowler is slim. So the guy, I kind of ranked them in
Why do you think that? Because Cam Fowler has been talked about a lot as potentially being on the trade block with the Anaheim Ducks. We know that they have a lot of very good defensemen coming through their pipeline.
Yep.
We know that he's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency.
Well, you also have Hampus Lindholm and Sammy Vatanen signed long-term, right?
Right. So how much money can the Ducks afford to put on their back end is the question.
He only makes $4 million. I think Cam Fowler at $4 million is a bargain.
It is, but he's going to be a UFA after the next season. So he's going to ask for more than $4 million.
Right, and Dougie Hamilton, by the way, his entry-level contract was up when he was traded, and the Boston Bruins had salary cap issues. So that's why he was traded,
right?
Because they didn't want to sign him to what he was asking for. So a lot of these defensemen have 1 year left on this on these contracts. I couldn't find one exact comparable for Dougie Hamilton, but all of these defensemen, I think, are of similar ilk as Dougie Hamilton. So I'm going to keep going through here. Another guy that I think it's very highly unlikely that the Jets get this guy, but I think he would be perfect for what they need.
Yeah, but
Jacob Slavin.
Yeah, but there's no reason the Carolina Hurricanes would get rid of
him. Well, the only reason would be you've got Justin Falk signed long-term. Noah Hanifin's going to be signed long-term. Then you've got Hayden Fleury coming up through the system. He's a left-shot defenseman. So, again, there was a reason why I picked a guy like Slavin. Okay. Now Slavin, NHL.com, came out with their underrated team. He was on it. He's having an excellent year. He's got 31 points, and he's only got 1 year left on his entry-level deal at $742,000. Now, again, to get a guy like Jacob Slavin, I'm not just kind of throwing out these pie-in-the-sky ideas. To get a guy like Jacob Slavin, you're going to have to give up most likely a first-rounder, a solid prospect, and maybe another draft pick or another player, because Jacob Slavin's that good. You ask anybody in the Carolina Hurricanes organization, they're going to tell you that, you know, he's turned into one of their best defensemen. So, again, I'm just kind of throwing out ideas here, but to me, these are the types of players that the Jets need if they want to take the next step. These give them an upgrade on defense.
And I just want to remind our audience that you're saying that these players would be Jets targets with the return, or with the Jets giving up in return their 2017 first-round pick, a young prospect, and maybe another draft pick as well. So these are quote-unquote blockbuster-type deals.
Right, and I don't necessarily know that that's Kyle Connor or Jack Roslovic.
Sure.
You know, it could be Nick Petan.
Is anybody acquiring Nick Petan? Has he shown enough to anybody that would make it seem he needs to come into my team? I need him on my roster.
Well, you're just adding to the package to get one of these players, right?
Yeah, but I mean, so, with all due respect to Nick Petan, I don't know that he's that huge of an asset. I mean,
well, he's a guy that I think could play it at the NHL level, and he's at an age where you think he still has an upside.
Sure.
So again, I'm just throwing it out, and I think if you gave up a first round pick and you gave up one of Connor Roslovic to get Jacob Slavin, I think I would do that.
From the Carolina Hurricanes' perspective, or from the Jets' perspective?
You're going to have to give up a lot to get some of these defensemen that I mentioned, some more than others.
You're saying because the hole that the Jets have on the left side of their defense is so dramatic that it's time to make what I would call a foundation-rattling trade.
A Hall for Larson trade.
But, you know, with more.
Right, and I don't think that they're going to trade, you know, Nikolai Ehlers, or they're not going to trade Mark Scheifele. I mean, I'm suggesting realistic trades, because if you look at the Jets, there are only so many spots in the top six, right?
Sure.
Like Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor, these are good players. We don't even know if they're going to play full-time in the NHL next year, but most likely they're going to be in the NHL at some point in the next year or two. So you have a lot of good forward prospects in the stable, so I think it's time to move some of these guys, if you need to acquire a top defenseman. And again, I'm looking at defensemen between the ages of 22 and 25. So I think if you acquire Ron Hainsey or you acquire Brian Campbell, that's just a short-term fix. I think they need to do a Dougie Hamilton-like trade, is what I'm saying. So I'm going to keep going through this list here, Drew.
Hang on. You'll go keep going through that list there on the other side of the break.
Okay.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two starts next on TSN 1290.
Check out the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Talk about Michael Frolik and the Jets penalty killing this hour here as we welcome you to hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I was going
to
say, can Michael Frolik play left side D?
No, but he can be the Jets' solution for their defense, their penalty killing shortcomings. But we'll talk about that this hour on the program as well. We'd like to mention that this segment is sponsored by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Frank is up. He's tweeting at us. He liked our first segment.
There you go. There's one person. Hour. There's exactly one person that's liked it so far. But I'm sure there's others out there. But we're making friends on social media, which is where I focus all of my spare time, let me tell you. All my attention after this, I'm going to go home and just focus on social media for the next 8 hours of my day, because that's time well used, undoubtedly. We were talking before the break in the previous segment about Jets left defense targets,
right?
Who the Jets might target to acquire in a significant trade this offseason. And by significant trade, we're talking a Dougie Hamilton-esque trade. He was traded, of course, from the Bruins to the Flames in exchange for a first-round pick and 2 second-round picks. So if the Jets were decided to use their first-round pick this year, assuming it falls, let's say, between 7 and 9, somewhere in that range, top 10, but not 1 or 2. Who should the Jets try and acquire with that first round pick? And we're looking at left defensive targets. And before the last player we mentioned was Jakub Slavin on the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, and he's having a great year. It's his second year in the NHL. And by the way, I should mention that especially these guys that we're mentioning at the top, there's a good chance that the teams that currently employ these guys would never trade them, right? So we should mention that. I'm just saying, if you wanted to significantly improve your left side via trade, these guys would be the types of players you'd want to target. The next guy, Drew, that I had on my list is Dmitry Orlov. And again, I tried to pick guys that there was a reason why the team would trade them. And when you look at the Washington Capitals, Matt Niskanen signed long-term. We talked about Carl Alzner earlier. I think if the Capitals are going to have an interesting decision to make. By the way, they're going to have an interesting decision to make with TJ Oshie and Justin Williams as well, but we're not going to get into that now. They're both pending UFAs. But when you look at Carl Alzner, Kevin Shattenkirk, I think we'd agree, you know, he might hit the UFA market. But again, right now you've got Alzner and Shattenkirk that are pending UFAs, plus you've got Dmitry Orlov, who is a pending RFA.
Yeah, RFA. Coming off a year where he's making $2.57 million.
Yes, and if you watch the Capitals, and I've watched the Capitals quite a bit this year, he's having a career year. And Dmitry Orlov right now is paired up with Matt Niskanen on the second pair for the Washington Capitals. We know how good of a defensive team the Washington Capitals are. Dmitry Orlov, I think, would look great on the Jets' blue line. He's 25 years old. And to acquire Dmitry Orlov, Drew, I think you would probably have to give up, again, a first-round pick and a prospect to get Dmitry Orlov. I think he's that good. Now, and when you look at his contract, too, I think you're talking about a guy who could probably ask for $4 or $5 million a year.
Well, I think that's part of what makes you'd mentioned Cam Fowler earlier at the top of your list. And I think that's part of what makes a deal for acquiring a guy like Cam Fowler so difficult.
Right.
Is that if you're the Jets and you're acquiring him and you're giving up a first round pick and a couple second round picks, or a first round pick and one of your prospects, or whatever you're giving up, you can't give that up just for 1 year of a guy like Cam Fowler. You would need him to avoid going to unrestricted free agency status and, you know, exploring the market. You would need him to make a long-term commitment to Winnipeg.
Right, and that's why maybe Dmitry Orlov is better as an option, similar to Dougie Hamilton, because he's a pending RFA as opposed to, as you mentioned, Drew Fowler is a UFA after next year. So if you trade for Orlov, you'd imagine the Jets would probably sign him to, what, 4 or 5 years minimum?
If he wants to sign. I mean, again, this is another guy who would be, you know, he's only a couple years away from unrestricted free agency.
Right. And again, I think when, you know, we talked about Orpik has also signed long term. Well, he's got 2 more years left. And then you've got John Carlson, who's got 1 more year before UFA status. And Carlson is their best offensive defenseman. So I was kind of looking at this like, okay, you've got Niskanen and Orpik signed. You're probably going to re-sign Carlson before he becomes UFA. And then there's also a chance they keep Alzner. So I was thinking, how many defensemen there can you pay, you know, above $4 or $5 million? That's why I thought Orlov could maybe be an interesting option there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate where you're coming from. My concern, really, with all these acquisitions is that you're giving up, theoretically, you have to give up a fairly significant package. First-round picks, draft picks, you know, second-round picks, which we know this team holds on to like they're gold.
Right.
And so if you're giving all that up, you can't give it up for a guy who's only going to be here for 1 year or 2 years.
Right.
And that's where the difficulty I think the Jets are going to run into is that you're going to try to acquire a guy. If you're giving up that much, you're going to try and acquire a guy who you can control for at least the next 3 or 4 seasons. But the idea that number of that guy is necessarily going to be available from a lot of these other teams is a big question mark.
Exactly, and I mentioned that earlier. I don't know if teams would even trade these guys. You might have to give up more than you're comfortable with, right? So, but what I'm saying is to get a player like this, and again, going back to what I said before, Drew, if the two ways you can acquire a left side defenseman are via trade or via free agency. With the exception of Carl Alzner, I don't know how many guys really fit that need because all of the other UFA defensemen, we went over them, right? Guys like Brian Campbell.
Yeah.
Guys like Michael Stone.
Yeah, Michael
guys
Stone.
Guys like Chris Russell. Yeah. I don't know if
Ron Hainsey. You know,
right. These guys are only short-term fixes, right? If you acquire a guy like Jacob Slavin or Cam Fowler or Dmitry Orlov, these are guys who are 22, 25 years old. I think you set yourself up nicer on that left side because, again, going back to what we were saying during the first hour, Josh Morrissey's turned into a top pairing defenseman, I think, even in 1 year. At the very least, he's a top four defenseman.
Top four.
Right?
So
right now, your left side is your top three defensemen are Josh Morrissey, Toby Enstrom, and Ben Chiarot. And Toby Enstrom's only got 1 year left on his contract. It's possible next year is his last year in Winnipeg. So who else is coming up through the system? The Jets don't have anybody else. Logan Stanley is 3 or 4 years away.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't even know if he's going to be an NHL defenseman.
Well, I mean, he's a first-round pick that they traded up to acquire, so he better damn well be.
I'm just saying, I mean, there are guys that end up getting drafted
and then never
in the first round and never play full-time in the NHL.
You're absolutely right. But you're right. The Jets have a here-and-now problem, and the solution to that problem, if that's what you want to call Logan Stanley, is 4 years away from being a realistic option.
And that's what, I guess, you know, the point I'm trying to hammer home here is that I think to make their left side better, it has to be via trade. And these are some of the guys I was looking at. And there are others. There's probably guys that I missed here. Brady Shea is another guy, Drew. I really like the way Brady Shea plays, another American defenseman. He's a guy that I think...
On the Rangers.
Yeah, he's been playing on the left side there with the Rangers. He's 22 years old. He was drafted in the first round, late in the first round, same year Trouba was drafted. He's got 34 points this year, 1 year left on his entry-level contract. So again, you control him if you acquire a guy like Brady Shea. Now, a guy like Brady Shea, what do you have to give up to acquire him? A first-rounder and Nick Batan? Does that get you Brady Shea? It might.
Yeah, I mean, if the Rangers even have the interest in making the deal.
Exactly, but I'm just saying, you know, I look at a guy like Shea, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He's got some offensive upside. This is his second year in the NHL. First full-time year, really. But when you look at, you know, that Rangers defense, you know, they've got other guys in front of him. And again, I don't even know if the Rangers want to part with him because he's a guy I think they think has a long future in the NHL. But just another interesting guy that I think could be a possible trade target for the Jets.
You know, it's an interesting list that you put together. And I think the big problem with a lot of it is that I don't think a number of these teams are interested in parting with their players. So the Jets are going to have to really come to them.
But again, if Chevy offers them, Drew,
if it's a Godfather offer.
Sure.
If it's a Godfather offer. Or, I mean, the Dougie Hamilton situation for the Calgary Flames was, I think, a confluence of perfect events in that the Bruins
had no cap space.
The Bruins had a player they weren't sure exactly what Dougie Hamilton was going to turn into.
For the record, by the way, that was an excellent trade. I mean, Dougie Hamilton's having a fantastic year.
Yeah, for the Flames, yep. Yes. And he's blossomed into more of a player than the Bruins. The Bruins weren't sure what they had in Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah, I forget who the Bruins drafted with their first-round pick, if it was Jacobs Borrell or Jake DeBrusk. Because remember, they had three picks in a row for that draft, that 2015 draft?
Right. That's exactly right.
Not sure who it was, so we'll find out, you know, how good that player ends up being. But
it's looking good from the Calgary perspective right now, but that's what the Jets need to... I mean, where do you see young defensemen being traded? You don't see it very often. You saw it. I mean, Seth Jones was traded for Ryan Johansson, and that's because, you know, the Predators had an abundance of blue liners, needed a forward.
Well, they needed a number one center is what they needed.
Right now, that trade looks way better for Columbus than it does for Nashville. Seth Jones has you know, is their top defenseman, and Ryan Johansson's having a down year for the Predators.
That was a trade that I think helped both teams, though. But yeah, if we're looking at it in terms of straight up, which I guess how would we not? It was a straight up trade.
It was a straight up trade.
But yeah, I would probably agree with you. Columbus won that trade, but I also think that Nashville addressed an area that they needed to address.
Yeah.
Right. They needed to be bigger and more talented up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult proposition, or at least it's made out to be such a difficult proposition to make a trade in this day and age. Never mind a trade involving a young. You know, a young up and coming defenseman for a package of prospects.
But how do you get a young talented player, a young talented left side defenseman like a Cam Fowler, like a Jacob Slavin, like a Brady Shea?
Like how
do you get that through free agency? You just can't.
You
can't. So that's what I'm saying. I think the Jets need to address that via trade.
I agree with you, and I agreed with you when we brought this up on Wednesday's midweek show. The problem is. And it's a very difficult trade, I think, to consummate unless you absolutely pay through the teeth. If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you might have to pay an absolute king's ransom, more than you're necessarily comfortable in paying, in order to get that defenseman.
Calgary had to give up a first rounder and two second rounders. Edmonton had to give up Taylor Hall.
Yeah, so, well, that was a bad trade from the Oilers. When the Oilers made that trade, that was a bad trade.
They're in the playoff spot now, right? And again, I would.
That's
Connor, I'm biased because I'm a
Devils
fan.
That's Connor McDavid related. That's not Adam Larson specifically related.
Well,
that's much more to do with
their defense is better than it was last year.
Better, but that has way more to do with Connor McDavid and the performance of Cam Talbot than it does. Adam Larson has been a nice fit, but he hasn't been revolutionizing the Edmonton Oilers.
But again, teams made these trades because they had to. Right, the Oilers and Oscar Klefbom, having a healthy Oscar Klefbom has helped. Darnell Nurse has had a nice season. So you're right. Adam Larson, you know, didn't go in there, and he's not Bobby Orr. But the point is that teams make these trades to address weaknesses, right? And the Jets' strength right now, the Jets can put the puck in the net. Jets are top 10 in the league right now in goals for.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to do something about the D in goaltending. And again, we've been saying this now for probably 3 years. It hasn't been addressed yet via trade, so...
Yeah,
again, that's just my opinion.
When we come back, we're going to discuss the Jets' struggling penalty kill yet again this season. It is towards the bottom of the NHL. We look at that as an issue. We look at potential solutions there. And we look back and with hindsight, and was the decision to not re-sign or the inability to re-sign Michael Frolik, is that directly attributable to the struggling penalty kill since then? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, her final night in town. She's been playing before packed houses each and every night. Miss Pat, two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Be sure to get your tickets at RumorsComedyClub.com. And a reminder, coming up in April, Sean Wayans, of course, one of the Wayans brothers, is going to be at Rumors, and the guys from Super Troopers, on the heels of Super Troopers 2 coming out. Kevin Heffernan Cronin and Steve Lemmy are going to be at Rumors at the end of April as well. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzy, the Jets' penalty kill, stop me if you've heard this before, continues to struggle. 29th in the NHL this year. You know, Thursday night's game against the Los Angeles Kings, an absolute atrocity. Three goals against on the Jets' penalty kill by a team in the Los Angeles Kings that has trouble scoring goals, period. Of course, you give them enough opportunities on the power play, they're going to succeed. And as a result, the Jets' penalty kill for the second straight year at the bottom of the NHL. Last year, it ended 25th in the NHL. This year, currently, it's 29th. Can you make the connection that the Jets' penalty kill struggles have reared their ugly head ever since the team either decided not to or weren't able to re-sign Michael Frolik and he went to the Calgary Flames?
Well, Drew, you have the numbers right there, right? 2013-2014, the first year that Paul Maurice took over, the Jets had Michael Frolik. They had the 10th best PK.
Yeah.
2014-2015, Maurice's second year as head coach, they still had Michael Frolik. That was the year they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
They had the 13th best penalty kill.
That's correct. That's in the top half of the NHL.
Right. The last 2 years, 25th last year and 29th this year. So again, is it just Michael Frolik? Absolutely not. I mean, you can't just say it's Michael Frolik's absence from the team, but certainly, you know, it hasn't helped because Michael Frolik was always out there on the first penalty kill unit. Mm-hmm. Very talented player, very good defensive forward. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit during the first hour with, you know, the Jets and giving up the three power play goals in Los Angeles. You've still got talented guys out there. And I think they miss a guy like Tyler Myers big time. But when you look at the forwards they have, Blake Wheeler penalty kills, you know, Adam Lowry's out there. You've got Joel Armia. You've got Sean Mathias. Sean Mathias is injured, obviously, right now. But I think these guys have the ability to kill penalties. But Michael Frolik was a penalty killing specialist. So again, is this something that the Jets need to acquire via a trade in free agency for trade? Maybe. But when you look at what Michael Frolik did for the Jets on the penalty kill and also providing offense, because he had some pretty decent numbers kind of in a secondary scoring role. But, you know, with Calgary this year, he's got 42 points. He's been amazing on that line with Backlund and Tkachuk, the 3M line.
The 3M line, yeah.
So I think they do miss him. Now, again, is it just Michael Frolik? No, it's not. And the best penalty killer is usually going to be the goaltender. And the Jets haven't got above average or average goaltending this year, so I think that's hurt them as well. And again, I think it comes down to what I was saying before. I mean, how many shutdown defensemen do the Jets have? I hate to keep, you know, harping on that. But as far as I'm concerned, they don't have a guy. And again, lately, Mark Stewart has been out there for the penalty kill. But Mark Stewart's not a guy that...
Mark Stewart's not an NHL defenseman.
Well, he doesn't factor into the long-term plans for the Jets. He's got 1 year left on his contract. Again, I'm a huge Mark Stewart fan. Yeah. I mean, I like the guy a lot. I'm just saying, I think you need an upgrade in that position. You need a guy that can go out there, a big body, you know, so like a Mark Stahl type. I've mentioned that on the show before. I think they lack that on this team. So I think it's that, and you don't have a penalty-killing specialist like Michael Frolik. Drew, I think they want a guy like Joel Armia to be that, and I think Sean Mathias is a guy that they had in that role, and I think Sean Mathias actually earlier in the season was doing a pretty good job. But again, it's not just one or two players, Drew. It's a four-man unit out there.
But do they need to... I agree. There's definitely not a one person. You know, you can't. It's not one person's job. It's a four man unit. Is that something that they need to acquire this off season? Do they need to try and find that sort of defensive specialist who can shut things down? Is that guy on the roster? We've seen Lowry for a number of years now.
It's the third line right now. I mean, the Lowry, Armia,
but
Mathias
are they
line.
A shutdown line? I mean, yeah, can they do the job?
Yeah, I think they can. And you know, do you maybe prefer that line be a fourth line? Yeah, probably. I think when you bring in guys like Connor and Roslovic into the lineup in the next year or two, most likely Lowry, Armia, and Mathias, you'd probably want to be a fourth line, and that would be an excellent fourth line. Right now it's a third line, but yeah, absolutely, Drew. That line has size and they have speed and, you know, they have toughness. I think we've seen that line, you know, in the offensive zone cycle the puck, but we've also seen that these guys can defend, right? So I do think these guys are shutdown guys.
Adam Lowry leads the team among forwards with 2 minutes and 17 seconds of shorthanded time on ice per game played this season.
Yep.
is he suited? Do you think that he can develop into that role of being that, you know, the guy, you know, the penalty killing specialist? Does he, is that his, I mean, because he's also playing a significant number of minutes on the power play. You know, is he suited for that role? I mean, and I don't know the answer. I don't know that the answer to that question is yes, 100%, and he's right. just a young player, and it still takes some time to develop.
I think they want him to be that player, Drew. They yeah. want him to be that kind of two-way forward, you know, that big guy, kind of like a Brian Boyle type.
Yeah, want versus can, though, are two very different things.
Well, you're right, and I think, is Adam Lowry at this point the best penalty killer in the world? No. But, you know, I think he, you know, he's not the best skater. But I like his game. But again, maybe he's better suited for a second penalty killing role, right? You don't put him out there for the first penalty killing unit. You put him out there for the second penalty killing unit. So again, I mean,
which leaves the question of where do you find your penalty killers at this point in time?
Right.
Because I mean, you know, third among forwards is Brandon Tanev. I mean, Brandon Tanev, for with all due respect, hasn't shown me that he's a bona fide NHL player.
Well, that's why he was sent down.
Right. So he's a bit of a tweener. Andrew Kopp is fourth on the team. Andrew Kopp has had a nice season, I think.
And they also don't know if Andrew Kopp is going to be a winger or center, because he was a center last year, and then he's been more of a winger this year.
Joel Armia has, you know, shown flashes of skill and flashes of being a very good, of being able to turn the puck over on opponents.
They're still trying to find that guy.
It just seems like it's another... It's amazing that there's this many unanswered questions year after year after year, and nothing seems to ever change or change that dramatically. It's they just, you know, at some point in time you can press fast forward a little bit on the development of things, or if guys aren't developing at the speed that you want them to, you can provide in, you can insulate them with somebody. Now, I don't know who's available that would be a shutdown penalty killing specialist. You know, so I mean, it's easy for me to sit here, you know, at 10,000 feet and say they have to be better and they have to do better. But when you're 29th in the league in penalty kill, and you're 25th in the league in penalty kill the year earlier,
well, and you also take more penalties than anybody,
take way more penalties. It just seems like it's another off-season priority for this team would be to try and find a player who can solidify the penalty killing situation for the Jets.
Right, and that could be a shutdown defenseman or it could be a shutdown forward.
Sure, doesn't necessarily have to be one versus, it doesn't have to be one versus the other. I'm just pointing back to, you know, it'd been, you know, the Michael Frolik, because I think what they expected, I think the reason that Michael Frolik didn't re-sign here is they thought that Alex Burmistrov can fill the role that Michael Frolik played for this team, and when they brought him back over from the KHL, it was almost, you know, two simultaneous things. Frolik goes to Calgary,
yeah,
Burmistrov gets re-signed. It was a terrible decision, another failure by the front office of this organization in identifying talent. I mean, that it was a failure. Any way you cut it, any way you look at it, through as you know, as
Burmy's been tearing it up in Arizona, though, Drew.
I honestly couldn't even tell you, has he done anything in Arizona?
He's been okay.
He's been, on a terrible team.
Who's been that great on Arizona this year, really?
I was being honest. I haven't even looked at it to see.
Well, he was getting quite a few points when he first went over there. I don't even know if he's healthy right now.
Alex Burmistrov has one goal in 19 games with the Arizona Coyotes.
He's got some assists.
He's got eight.
It's better than he was doing in Winnipeg.
It's true. It is. I mean, but it just goes to show you, it's another failure from the Jets front office in dealing, in understanding talent. And it just... another issue that they're going to have to try and resolve this offseason. It's going to be a fascinating offseason for this team because they really don't have a ton of guys who are UFA, who are important, who are essential. But you can't come back with the exact same roster next year and think that things are going to be any different.
Well, the PK can only get better because it can't get worse.
Well, it actually can. It can drop to 31st next year. There's a new team in the league. They could be worse than Las Vegas' PK next year. In fact, I think they probably will be worse than Las Vegas' PK next year if they don't change things around. In any event, Tim Campbell from NHL.com, he joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.